Welcome to another Crime Cast by Revamp. Revamp stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. We're based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. And we are currently working over 30 cold cases from the Arkansas-Oklahoma area. Today, our Crime Cast is going to be on the subject of Lori Ann Murchison. And we're going to have Mr. Murchison, who was Lori Ann Murchison's father, here with us. He's going to talk about the weekend that she went missing. And we're also going to have Tom Honeycutt here, who is our team coordinator for the Arkansas team of Revamp. Now, Tom is going to go into some details on some of the speculation, some of the rumors, and the facts that are in the case. So we're going to talk to him in just a moment. But if you've lived in Fort Smith, Arkansas for any length of time, or lived here in 1995, you probably heard of this case. Lori Ann Murchison was a young lady who had a young daughter. She had a family. She had sisters that loved her. And she just vanished. She just absolutely vanished. So over the years, a lot of things have surfaced, and we're going to talk about some of those rumors and how they got started through jailhouse talk, cell room talk, whatever you want to call it. I've spent a lot of time with Mr. Murchison, and I've grown to really adore this man, and I love to talk to him. We've spent some time down on the river. He's so energetic. He wears me out trying to hike and try to keep up with him. But he has been through so much in the search for his missing daughter, and I think this is a crime cast that you are not going to want to miss, especially if you live in the Fort Smith, Arkansas area. So let's just dive right in, and let's talk to Tom first. Tom, do you want to introduce yourself?
This is Tom Honeycutt with Revamp, and we are here to discuss the case of Lori Ann Murchison. Lori went missing on September 2nd, 1995, and she's never been found. She's never told anyone that she moved away or that she is alive but just doesn't want to be in touch with anybody. So she really is classified as a missing persons case, although most of the information that we've reviewed would indicate that she's still here in this community. She's deceased. And so what Revamp has done in reviewing this case is try to see what was done in her investigation, what may not have been done, what might be some inconsistencies in the case that might be further investigated with time, as we are here 31 years later, looking at a case in Fort Smith. Revamp has basically two criteria for evaluating whether or not we can be involved in a case. And the first is that the case is unresolved, that there's no substantial investigative work for more than a year on the case. That certainly, this case qualifies in that regard. Secondly, the case has been referred to us by one or more concerned parties, whether that's family, friends, law enforcement, who believe that aspects of the case were overlooked or not investigated, and might be in time, as the passage of time, could be looked at and possibly develop new information. So in the case of Lori, as we said, she went missing on September 2nd, really the morning of September 2nd, after she left the Sebastian County Adult Detention Facility. She had been arrested the night before with her boyfriend, Jerry Cogan, and he was still in the jail. The suggestion is that she was going to get to someone who could assist in bonding him out. That's what he said later when he was interviewed, that they had discussed it and that she was going to, get the financial means to get a bonding company to bond him out. Now, he ended up staying in jail for 5 to 6 days because she went missing. And, of course, I don't think he had any other family in the area to help him with his situation. And so the investigation began on Tuesday following that Friday night. When we looked at the investigation file, of course, being an old case, an unresolved case with no substantial activity, we were given a copy of the what we believe is the complete investigative file. And I'm hedging my bets a little bit there because things get lost sometimes, and there does not appear to have been any significant activity on the file since 2001. And so you don't know anything about anything you don't have in your hands. So anyway, we did an extensive review of the file, and despite vigorous efforts and identification of possible suspects, the case was hampered by not being able to find Lori or find Lori's body. You know, that's probably not surprising in missing persons cases because when you do find the body, oftentimes that tells you the cause and manner of death. It also tells you a location. It also might provide you with additional witnesses. But since Lori's body was never found, that doesn't help. Now, in the investigative file, when I went through it, there were probably 6 to 7 documented scenarios as to what happened to Lori. These were people, witnesses, who said, well, I was told that this is what happened, or this is what happened, it's my understanding, this is where she went, and this is what happened. Okay, the detectives made an effort to ride through that information to find verification of it, but it never did lead to a location, except one location, for them to actually search for Lori, and that was a forensic dig on the property of the Thompson Salvage Company off of Kelly Highway, over on the eastern portion of the city. And detectives went down there with assistants and did a thorough dig and did not discover any information that will prove fruitful for their continued investigation. In 2005, Lori's name got caught up into a political / criminal investigation arising out of Washington, D.C. and involving the former prosecuting attorney of Sebastian and Crawford County, Ron Fields. He was at the time a senior level executive in the Drug Enforcement Administration, with serving alongside or serving under the current governor of the state of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson. And once these allegations were lodged against Mr. Fields, he lost his security clearance and he was no longer able to work with the DEA and returned to Fort Smith. Based on extensive news reporting of that investigation, there were never any criminal charges referred against Ron Fields, and he was essentially exonerated of any involvement by nothing happening in a civil or criminal court. But Lori's name was attached to all that, and also some other individuals in the community who were alleged to have been involved in her murder. We've been told by some sources that the FBI spent close to 3 years and $3 million trying to obtain some evidence against Mr. Fields, and as I said before, they were unsuccessful because there were never any charges brought against him, and he's a practicing attorney here in Fort Smith, and was and is connected to several cases that Revamp has been involved in.
As far as the prosecutor?
Well, he was the prosecutor in the case involving Lois Enzi. He was the prosecutor, his office was the prosecutor in the case of Leslie Dawn Haig. And so, I mean, not that he was directly involved, but his office had the responsibility for managing the investigation from the prosecution standpoint. So where we are today is a number of the names that have come up in the course of this investigation are deceased. They're no longer available. Their recorded statements or written witness statements are on the record, but they're not, you can't review them, challenge them, seek to see if something has changed over the course of the years because they're no longer around, and that makes it more difficult. And all, you know, certainly impossible to impeach them if, in fact, you know, they said something that was wrong at the time in order to avoid suspicions. And so what we have hoped to do with Revamp is use information that has been provided to us through the investigative file to locate Lori. And as I said, in some of the different scenarios involved her body being put in the Arkansas River, which of course would be long since gone and next to impossible to you know, sometimes the river yields its victims and sometimes it does not. But in this instance, our best information is that that's not what happened. And so we are investigating information provided to us that we would hope could lead us to recovering her body and turning her back over to her family for some measure of closure. It's, you know, hard to say that in a case like this, someone is not held responsible for the actions that led to the death of an individual, but in this case we would just like to be able to achieve some result that would bring her home.
Thank you, Tom. And that truly is our mission at this point, is to bring her home to her family. We realize that this is a very old case, and several agencies, even a federal agency, has dove into this. As Tom said, we have heard that $3 million in many years were spent on what we believe was a jailhouse rumor, just someone trying to jockey for a position that would be advantageous for them. But let's go now to Mr. Murchison, who I just cannot stress enough how much I adore this man and how much I respect him. And how much it breaks my heart to think what he has been through for three decades searching for his lost daughter. So, Wilburn, would you mind telling us the story of what took place the weekend that your daughter went missing and how it has affected you?
I'm Wilburn Murchison. Loanne's father. September 2nd. After the weekend, Nancy, my wife, she took care of the baby when Lori wasn't home or she's going to run around or something. She took care of Brittany, Lori's baby. And when the weekend came that she come up missing in, we were used to Lori calling around midnight if she wasn't going to come home that night. She would call her mother and tell her that she, what time she would be home the next day. And when we got up the next morning and she didn't show up at the time she said, we went to the place that she had just moved to. and there was nobody there.
So she had just recently moved before she went missing.
Yeah.
And she was living where?
She was living on an apartment. I don't remember what the name of the thing was. I think it was one of Daryl's apartments. Her and her boyfriend moved into it kind of just a few weeks before then. And then they found this new place. And they got off of work Friday. They went and bought a car. And then when they bought the car, they used the car to haul their stuff. Their clothing didn't have any furniture or anything being a. And they took some of their clothing and went to a laundromat there at that Y on Midland, that big apartment house. It's apartment outfit. It's there where Midland splits off.
Garden Lodge?
Yeah, Garden Lodge. That's where they moved to.
Continental Motel.
Yeah, that's it. Continental Motel. That's what it was then. Okay. And now. But anyhow, they moved there, and they took some of their clothing and went to a laundry, and they done put stuff in their washers or dryers or whatever they done. Anyhow, they left and they went to a place called Shooters. This is stuff that I found out quickly. They went to a place called Shooters, and they stayed there till they thought the dryer was finished. They left there, going there, and when... they said come off of the interstate at one of the exits, and her boyfriend had bumped a car, and the police come out and took him to jail. They took her to jail for public drunk. I had talked to the bartender at Shooters and to the booking sergeant at the police station, and both of them said that Lori wasn't intoxicated. At the bar, the bartender said she had taken one beer and half of it was still there when they left. She was playing some kind of machine trying to win something. And then the booking in sergeant told me that he kind of argued with the resting officer about her not being drunk. But he had to do what the arresting officer said, so he did. So they put her in jail. And then the next morning, at that time, for public drunk, there wasn't a fine and no court or anything. They just keep you 6 hours and then they release you. They turned her loose at 5:43 in the morning. And she supposedly went to the bonding company. They were supposed to have called her a cab because she didn't have the money. She had to go get her check to bond her boyfriend out. She worked at a nursing home type thing. She never did make it to get that check. She never did ever make it over there to the place she worked to get her check.
And never seen again.
Not ever supposed to be saw by anybody again, anywhere. Several stories come up, naturally. Kind of drove my wife off deep end.
You and your wife were married almost 50 years.
Yeah.
And how did it affect you two, especially her and her health?
Well, when I saw that the police didn't seem to care, is my opinion. When we finally turned her in, she disappeared on a Friday night, went to jail, and got out Saturday morning. And Tuesday, we turned her in as missing, and they told me I had to wait at least 3 more days. And I said, we've already done that. She went missing Saturday morning. And they continued to tell me that I still had to wait 3 more days. And so I went to looking myself and said, we run into a lot of things that was just tales and stories. They kept calling my wife, usually in the night, and she'd been put in a wood chipper. She'd been burned in a wood stove, put in a barrel and thrown in a well, or put in a barrel and thrown in a pond. Just about every kind of weird story you can. Even one lady that was calling and telling my wife about twice a week some kind of weird story ended up a police officer's mother.
So for 31 years, you and your family have searched for Lori with no success. Now, Lori had a little girl, and you raised the little girl.
Yes.
So that had to affect her.
Well, like I said earlier, my wife and I raised Lori's daughter. Her name's Brittany. And Brittany was 4 years old at the time her mother went missing. And said, naturally, Nancy kind of took over the mothership, but still, she didn't have a mother. And there was a lot of things, a lot of torment that she went through with that, wondering where her mother was, wondering why her mother disappeared. And we would all like to know what happened. And what's happened, they'll never know. No, the truth will never be told. But on the other hand, well, just being able to find something somewhere that's solid evidence of who she is or was would be a thing that I could put in a grave plot beside her mother.
It's really hard to follow up behind Mr. Murchison. So let me say this. We will have a part two to this. It will probably come out in January of 2022. So watch for that. But in the meantime, if you or anyone you know has information about Lori Ann Murchison, her whereabouts, or what happened to her in September of 1995, we beg you, please come forward. You may have just a little bit of information that might put all of this into place. So our goal is to find Lori Ann Murchison and bring her home. Again, if you have any information, please contact the Fort Smith Police Department or contact Revamp at www.rememberEveryVictim.com or catch us on Facebook under Revamp, which stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. You can always contact us directly. Our phone number is on our website, or you can email us. But please, let's bring Lori Ann Murchison home. Her father has waited over 3 decades, and it's way past time. So until then, Lori Ann Murchison, we will not forget.